Dear listeners, I'm Lauren Conlon, and before you embark on this investigative journey with me, I want to offer a sincere word of my acknowledgement and gratitude. When I, as the host, first set out on this path, I was admittedly very green. I lacked the seasoned expertise and finesse that comes with experience in investigative podcasting and reporting. However, every story has a beginning and an ending, and this podcast represents the start of my own investigative odyssey. So as you dive into these episodes, you may notice rough edges or moments where my inexperience shines through, but please know that every stumble and misstep has been a crucial part of my learning process, and I've embraced each challenge as an opportunity for growth and improvement. So I want to express my heartfelt appreciation to each and every one of you who has stuck with the story despite my imperfections, because Grant's story is important. So your support and patience have been invaluable as I've navigated the complexities of investigative podcasting. And your feedback, whether constructive criticism, words of encouragement, or maybe something that wasn't so nice, has helped me and helped shape this podcast into what it is today. So without further ado, here is Corruption: What Happened to Grant Solomon.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Corruption: What Happened to Grant Solomon. I'm your host, Lauren Conlon. Let's quickly jump in, and we will very briefly discuss some of the headaches from last week just to start. And I don't want to go in circles. I know that we've gone over this. I just want to make sure everyone is on the same page. But I want to reiterate that the citizen complaint against GCA has been reissued across the board. Rest assured, we know what needs to be done here. And I do want to read another recent response from the Williamson County Sheriff's Office that we received. So you may recall the name Detective Tamika Sanders, and she's now a lieutenant. You may recall that name from last season because she actually criminally investigated Gracie's claims of alleged abuse toward her father. And long story short, essentially, Sanders concluded that Angie was crazy and fed all this stuff for Gracie to say, more or less. But sure enough, Lieutenant Tamika Sanders was the one who wrote back regarding the complaint, and she said this. Quote, "Dear Miss Hicks, I have reviewed the allegations you made against personnel at Grace Christian Academy. As I'm sure you know, the role of Williamson County Sheriff's Office is to investigate and prosecute criminal matters. After reviewing all documents, I regret to inform you the statute of limitations has expired on any potential criminal investigation. Violation of duty to report, TCA 37-1-412, is a Class A misdemeanor, which means a person can be prosecuted within 1 year of the alleged violation. You provided information regarding potential violations in 2018, which means it's outside the time for which a person could be prosecuted. If you believe there are current violations of law occurring, please don't hesitate to contact me, Lieutenant Tamika Sanders," end quote. So this complaint is not against one person specifically. You can read, it's against the school, and some of the emails written by parents were written in 2021, and Gracie's restraining and no contact order was also well after 2018. So while the criminal statute has run out, okay, I'm just willing to bet if this complaint was about someone else or about a different school, perhaps they would have offered a little bit more expertise and a little bit more help. And maybe they would have said something like, okay, well, the criminal statute has run out, fine, but the civil statute of limitations is 10 years. So maybe you go that route. And while legally it's not a conflict of interest for Sanders to look into this complaint, it doesn't sit well with me, and it didn't sit well. This is the person that had a chance to help in 2018 but determined otherwise, and now this is the person reviewing the complaint? And now Grant Solomon is no longer with us? This is exactly why Angie and Gracie Solomon feel alone and helpless in Franklin and Williamson County. But rest assured, like I said, we know what needs to be done. Okay, before we get to today's special guest, Kirk Nurmi, who rose to fame when he was Jody Arias' lead defense attorney, I do want to give a bit of a refresher on why Grant's family and friends so staunchly insisted his case be reopened or investigated just months after his death. And I am not going to include any of the forensic findings that we uncovered last year. I'm just going to remind you why Angie, Gracie, and so many others demanded that Grant's death be looked into further. And as I read the list to you, I really want you to imagine that Grant is your child. And there is a reason I'm reminding you of all this, and it has to do with my conversation with Kirk Nurmi. But before I read you the list, I want to bring up former FBI agent Dan Hodges, who worked as a PI on this case. He investigated this case for over a year with Angie, and he said on the record, quote, "It is impossible for Grant Solomon to have died without assistance," end quote. And please also note, when I'm going over this list, some of this could be considered hearsay or speculatory, but I do feel like hearsay is okay sometimes. I mean, if you watched that docuseries American Nightmare on Netflix, police essentially honed in on the boyfriend of this girl that got kidnapped because they heard that he was talking to his ex. So all of a sudden, this information of him innocently just talking to his ex makes him this terrible, horrible cheater who wants his girlfriend kidnapped. That sounds like hearsay to me. And then he became the main suspect. But okay, here are the most prominent questions that drew suspicion in the death of Grant Solomon. Quote, "Dad's story does not appear to match Grant's body. Dad said Grant got caught under the truck and was run over and dragged down a parking lot to a rocky ditch where he was left underneath his own Toyota Tacoma. The medical report shows one injury to the back of Grant's head, blunt force trauma as cause of death. Grant's body had zero evidence of low-speed collision impact or dragging. No broken bones, no scratches, abrasions, burns, or trauma. No scattered body parts that would normally be expected from being drug under a vehicle or jagged asphalt. There appeared to be no spinal cord trauma as expected. As Grant laid under the truck waiting for the ambulance, one witness said Grant responded to his father's command of move your head side to side as heard on the 911 call, which Grant did. The only mark on Grant's body was bruising on his hip bone, which is believed to be from a sliding incident in baseball. Next, we have Grant's clothes. Grant's shoes were still on his feet with no scuff marks. Grant's socks were still perfectly white and pulled up without marks. His cross necklace was still intact around his neck. Grant's hands did not have a mark on them. Grant had nothing underneath his nails. Even the funeral home was expecting a closed casket funeral and were shocked to find Grant in near perfect condition. Grant's body was perfect for the funeral with an open casket. Hardly any evidence of being drugged and run over by a vehicle. Next, there was no blood at the top of the hill. Dad claims Grant was dragged by the truck before crashing down into the rocky ditch. That's almost 60 feet. Police photos verify that blood was at the bottom of the hill in the ditch. Photos show that the rock that Grant bled out on from blunt force trauma to the skull is in the bottom of the ditch. In Grant's case, there was no suggested evidence of vehicle ground contact to his body or trajectory contact in the parking lot, and no initial impact injury of vehicle on Grant's body or in the parking lot. Grant's body suggests that the truck never made contact with him. The undercarriage of the vehicle was boiling hot as it was driven from Franklin to Gallatin for over an hour in July, and Grant's skin had zero burns. Next, we have the tire tracks. The tire tracks were moving forward. Aaron claims the truck rolled backwards into a rocky ditch. However, police photos show tire tracks moving forward in the ditch. Police photos suggest that the truck was pulled forward off the road and over Grant. This does not match Aaron's story of the truck rolling backwards. And obviously, Aaron means dad. Next, we have the forensic investigation result on Grant's truck. Investigator Dan Hodges had a forensic exam completed on the truck. One purpose of the forensics was to recover the black box that records activity within the vehicle, much like an airplane black box. Dad, Aaron Solomon, claimed the truck malfunctioned and killed his son, yet he drove that truck around for months after his son's death. The black box showed zero collisions to the truck and confirmed that the truck had not been totaled. In fact, the truck was in great condition and drivable. The forensics also showed zero collisions during the time period of the incident. This suggests the truck did not crash backwards and land in the rocky ditch below. It also did not show scratches on the undercarriage, which would have likely been present since the rocks were so large in the ditch. Next, we have the statement from the tow truck company. The tow truck company provided a written statement that the truck was found in park. Well, how did the truck get in park when Grant was underneath it and Dad Aaron is claiming that it malfunctioned? Next, we have Grant's belongings that were found near the sidewalk by the road. One would have expected to find a trail of Grant's belongings starting at the top of the hill if he had started at the top of the hill and was dragged underneath the vehicle down the hill to the bottom of the ditch. But yet, police photos show Grant's sports goggles slash glasses were near the road, Grant's cell phone was still on with the GPS map showing in the ditch, and Life 360 was still on and working. Yet, when the phone was returned to Grant's mother, it had been damaged. It looked like a hammer had smashed the phone in the center of the screen due to the cracks being more like a spider web. Life 360 showed Grant's phone being driven around Hendersonville the next day. Who had the phone and why? And why wasn't his phone immediately turned over to the police knowing there was a death? The phone appeared later by Dad, Aaron Solomon. Next, we have the 911 call. Aaron never went to his son. And that right there, many parents have said, if my kid were under a truck, I would have lifted it myself, ran out on the road, screamed for help, held his hand, prayed with him, etc., etc. Aaron never went to be with his son. Next, Grant's progress seemed to decline. Why were most life-saving measures declined when Grant appeared to be improving in the ambulance on the way to Sumner Regional Medical? Why was Vandy life flight declined? No blood work was taken, no defibrillator, no body scans, no x-rays, no EEG, and no ventilator was given to Grant to be kept alive, knowing his mother and sister were on their way about 45 minutes out. And these next few points are speculatory and considered hearsay, in my opinion, but I feel the need to share them. So there was Aaron Solomon's behavior. Witnesses share that Aaron did not shed a tear at the hospital, and Aaron did not shed a tear at Grant's funeral, and Aaron was seen the morning after Grant's death at Coffee and Coconuts in Tennessee, sipping coffee and reading the newspaper. And then there was the volatile relationship that Aaron, Dad, and Grant had. And then there was the potential motive. And this is Grant saying that he was going to go to the courts and tell them everything that his father had allegedly been doing to his little sister, Gracie, and that the courts may take him seriously this time because he was now an adult. He was 18 years old. And there was also the hearsay that Grant potentially saw something on his father's computer that he shouldn't have, end quote. All right, and I know that everybody grieves differently, so I will just leave that there. But keep in mind, everything I said, apparently the Sumner County DA has facts and reasons why his death happened exactly how Dad Aaron Solomon said it happened. They just don't want to explain it to anyone or share the facts with anyone. So this is where Kirk Nurmi comes in. So part of me really, and I say this to Kirk, I really just want to take Aaron Solomon out of the equation when it comes down to finding out what happened to Grant, because we get it. No proof, all circumstantial. He's not guilty of anything. Okay, fine. But what happened to Grant? What happened? And can we prove what happened to him with an autopsy or an accident recon? And Kirk doesn't think so, and you'll hear why. So let me just tell you a little bit about him before I play our interview. Kirk rose to international prominence as the lead counsel for the infamous Jodi Arias. The stress of that case brought cancer into his life, and with cancer came big changes, a whole new life, a life wherein happiness is his beacon. With this beacon in view, Kirk has written for the New York Daily News and authored 8 books. Kirk has also appeared on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, Court TV, Law and Crime Daily, Dr. Oz, The Mel Robbins Show, and The Today Show. He has also been featured in documentaries on Discovery, ID, and the Oxygen Network. Yet his most important work remains being a loving husband to his wife of 30 years and being a good pet parent to Ron the dog.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I think the people are really looking for an unbiased voice here. A lot of us have been screaming for somebody to pay attention to this case, someone to just pay attention to things that appear to be going on in Tennessee in general.
Well, I remember when you first asked me to consider being on your podcast, one of the first things I do when I'm asked that is to listen to the podcast. Mm. And I started with episode 1, logically, of course. And one of the things that stood out to me right away, in terms of the suspicions that you later discuss, happened in the 911 call. Because one of the things as a criminal defense attorney I do is begin, obviously, if I was defending Aaron, you look at the 911 call, you begin there, you look at his words, what have you, right?
Yeah.
And my suspicions were aroused because when someone makes a 911 call and they're trying to sell a story, that becomes problematic to a defense attorney, right? He's conclusory saying this is what happened, right? And then the question becomes, why is he trying to sell this story? Why is he trying to convince somebody that this is exactly what happened? And then the question is, does the evidence bear that out?
Absolutely. And we've had many experts on this show that echo exactly that. Now, here's something that I am realizing as I go through this and as I deal with this in real time. I think that at this point, we need to take Aaron Solomon out of the equation. Yes, he was the only witness. And yes, the family history is terrible. Allegations of abuse and this and that. I mean, that would have been even more of a reason for them to do this investigation in the first place, but they didn't. Recently, I had written a letter to the DA of Sumner County, and I just kind of said, you know, I did not mention Aaron's name at all. I think you really owe this family a better investigation. I really honed in on the lack of police work and what should have been done and the fact that the mother of the victim has no answers. How does that make sense? How is that okay? And his letter back to me just was all about Aaron Solomon. Well, I know there's this theory and that theory about Aaron Solomon, but let me tell you, the facts are you don't know the facts and there's nothing criminal that happened. Why wouldn't they share the facts with Grant's mother? This is so confusing. I've never seen the facts of an accident be so secretive. He wasn't a minor. He was 18.
Yeah, you know, I've never worked as a prosecutor in terms of what kind of relationship they have with the surviving victims. But I would say that in terms of the facts, while I agree with your speculation, be a bit of a wet blanket here, I don't think that you could ever, given the shoddy 57-minute investigation, that you could ever bring up facts that would support your suspicions enough to give proof beyond a reasonable doubt to a jury, or even enough to get a prosecutor to charge the case. I mean, we have to think about, I can't even remember the name of the podcast now. We had the Michael Turney case out here in Arizona, right, where the podcast kind of motivated the charging. And that was dismissed a directed verdict because of a lack of evidence, right? So going down that road doesn't serve anybody. And ultimately, to me, it seems hard-pressed that you're going to find the facts to support your speculation.
So it's funny you bring that up. What I was going through today was this is the DA that wrote me this letter about last week. And in 2021, Angie Solomon's attorneys brought forth evidence, new evidence, to the DA's office. And the DA, the ADA, the lead investigator, they took this evidence and they said they opened a second investigation. Well, there really wasn't a first investigation. I think it was more of a review. And I think that this second investigation was also a review, because what he ends up saying in this letter is that, yes, sure, Aaron Solomon did make conflicting statements. That is correct. But that is not enough to criminally charge him. And you're like, whoa, like, back up. Of course it's not enough to criminal, like, do the forensics here. They did not do any sort of accident recon. They didn't do any type of subpoenaing of witnesses after the fact. They didn't take any measurements. I mean, no fingerprints. I mean, they didn't treat this like an investigation. So it's perplexing to the public. It's perplexing to the family. I just cannot imagine having my son leave this earth that way. I get so emotional about it. I can't imagine him leaving the earth that way. And then these people telling me this over and over, just gaslighting and acting like I'm some kind of psychopath, you know?
Well, I get it. And I'm with you in terms of your suspicion. But when you have such a shoddy investigation, if you even want to call it an investigation to begin with, I don't know that you can go back. I'm not an accident reconstructionist. We could sit there and get somebody to come back and say it couldn't happen the way it was explained. So what? That's not proof. That's not proof of how it happened, right? Even if you get another autopsy, there's mainly, I would think, two mechanisms of death here, because we have the blow to the head. It was either a baseball bat or he was struck by the car and flung into something on a rock or something like that and hit the head, right? I don't think another autopsy is going to confirm that. I don't think it is. And even if it did, would that be definitive? Would that be, because if the DA were to come in and prosecute the case, and I was the defense attorney, my witnesses would all be the police department that investigated. They'd all come in their uniforms, and they'd all come in and say that they thought that this was an accident. There were no witnesses to it, what have you. And this is the conclusion they drew.
Well, I'll just correct you. There was no autopsy at all because Aaron Solomon got to the hospital and declined the autopsy.
Right. If you did an autopsy now, I still mm-hmm. don't think that would change the
Okay.
The
and
conclusion.
Then the second part is that apparently there were three witnesses per the 911 call, but they are nowhere to be found, or the police interviewed them and they won't share their names, or they won't share. I think that's, you make a lot of sense. Sure. Like if it were to go to trial in the state of Tennessee, you'd have all of these cops coming in saying, yeah, we did our diligence. We did this and that. So sure. Should this be a federal case against the cops? Like,
well, I don't know. You know, look, I'm not a federal expert. There'd have to be a civil rights violation. One of the things I would suggest to you, one of the things that I've thought about prior to you mentioning this police report with the three names scratched out, is that I've always had some reservations about the reality of these three men as witnesses. You know, I know a WPI employee mentioned that he saw those, but I think there's a power of suggestibility, and I don't know how familiar you are with eyewitness testimony. But, you know, so let's say you and Beth Karras and I were out having lunch, and because I'm a fan of Beth too. Mm-hmm. She used to chase me around the courthouse during the Jody Arias days.
Wow.
And if we all had lunch together and said, hey, remember when that guy in the pink suit was singing God Bless America outside the cafe? You might not remember it, but if Beth and I told you that happened, you might begin to believe over time that it happened. And especially when we're talking about a teenager WI employee, somebody like Aaron says, hey, there were three guys. Because to me, the existence of these three men is something that they would have no reason not to come forward at the time, right? They would. I mean, you could say there's people, the threats, et cetera. So my belief, and they don't have any personal relationship with Aaron. So my belief would be that they don't exist because somebody would have talked, somebody would have said something. They, in particular, would have had no reason not to. So I really cast some doubt on their existence. It might be, again, you know, you think about, when I go back to what I said in the very beginning, selling a story. Well, what gives a story more credibility, right? If it was just you and I having lunch and I said, remember that guy in the pink suit? You say, no, Kirk, you're nuts. But if Beth and I did it and somebody else was there and they said the same thing, you might start to believe that, and that might actually infuse into your memory. Right. So, so,
good point.
You know, when we talk about a teenager who's working at this baseball institute and Aaron says, hey, there's three guys, and a reporter comes back. And of course, as a reporter, you probably know people aren't always truthful with reporters. They certainly don't care as much about being truthful. And he just echoes what he was told by a perceived authority figure.
That's really interesting. That's super interesting. And I've weighed that too about these men. And I've also weighed the fact that maybe they were illegal immigrants and they had to run, or it's a whole passing the buck here, which I guess kind of hinges my suspicions more that something is going on, you know?
Yeah. I mean, like I say, I don't think your suspicions are without foundation. What I'm saying that mm-hmm. is it directly relates to this accident and the cause of this accident, I don't know that you're going to get to that proof. I really don't, because, you know, you don't have skid marks. You don't have any kind of braking. You don't have any kind of DNA testing to see if anybody got behind the wheel of that car and might have ran into Grant. So my understanding is the baseball bat has never been recovered. It's not going to be recovered now years later, right? So all those sort of things make me think that you're not going to get there. But one of the things that when I listened to your podcast, honestly, Lauren, I became a little concerned because I feel like you're beating your head against the wall, and I sense a lot of frustration. Mm-hmm. But I was heartened to see your email, because, you know, when I was thinking about this case before I got it, I kept thinking about, well, what was Grant's mission? What was his desire before his death? Was to expose the sexual misconduct of his father, his allegations, and
right.
his sister's allegations. And to me, it seems like there's much more of an avenue to do that, which is, to me, in some ways, my experience with criminals is that that label is much more burdensome than the label of killer.
That's interesting. And this is why we decided to pursue the avenues of the school not reporting the abuse when they were told. Let me ask you this. Yeah.
Let me ask you this. I don't know if they've contacted attorneys in, was it North Carolina?
Yes.
You know, like, for example, California has a civil statute that allows victims of molestation to sue their abusers when they reach the age of majority. Mm-hmm. So the civil avenue might be as fruitful, because the burden would be lesser, right? Whether it's more probable than not, what have you.
Yeah.
And if she were to file a suit like this through an attorney, then it's possible that evidence related to what happened with Grant and those things would possibly enhance her claim that she could make against him in civil court.
I think at this point, it's a matter of, okay, Aaron, we don't want to accuse you of anything that happened with Grant, but we want to find out what happened to Grant, and you were the only one that was there. So possibly, yes, if he's brought in for what he allegedly did to Gracie, maybe we can get some answers. I mean,
won't get answers as it relates to Grant, but you will get the best form of justice you can get out of the situation. But you know what? Don't you feel like in their hearts they know?
I do. Yes, absolutely. But I think it's also, Kirk, the fact that everybody calls them crazy. Everybody ignores them. Everybody passes the buck on this. And Grant's life it's more important. It's, you know what I mean? He deserves better than that. And I think that is where I think a lot of this frustration lies as well. Sure. I think they have an idea in their head of what happened. And so do a lot of people, I'm sure.
Yeah. And that goes back to what I was saying. Absent somebody coming forward and saying they witnessed this event, and if the three men don't exist, from what I've heard on your podcast, there was potentially one female that was there. You know, unless she comes forward, you're probably not going to get that. I mean, and look, it's a sad reality, but you can beat your head against the wall and the brick's not going to move, right? So get what you can. I mean, that's what I say. You're very passionate about it. I get it. But at the same time, you have to pursue the avenues that will get the most, that will expose the most, I think, in this situation. And that could mean putting him on trial civilly in North Carolina.
That's okay. That's really good advice. And I just want to reiterate. So you think, or not really reiterate, but just go over this. You think that if we do like the CAD drawing, the accident recon, all privately, you know, and present this evidence, let's say to the state, and it's new evidence and it's irrefutable. Like this, you know, we're showing you this absolutely did not happen. You know, and per the, you get it. You think there's no way that this would hold up in court just because it would be the cops that would come in and the same people.
I think the only thing it would do is enhance your speculation of what you already know. It would not provide proof. I mean, you could say, it didn't happen the way Aaron said it happened. Okay, how did it happen? And is a new autopsy going to get you there? I don't think so. Is an accident reconstruction? I think the best an accident reconstructionist can do is tell you that it didn't happen the way that Aaron described it. Okay, but does that mean that he was involved in Grant's death. No, it doesn't.
The cops can't go back and be like, listen, we got to talk then. We've got this evidence that says it didn't happen the way you said it happened. So you got to tell us, right? Like,
They could, but he doesn't have to talk. I mean, yeah. I know I'm a wet blanket, right?
No, you're not. You're not.
I'm just saying, I just don't think after, you know, several years that you're going to get there in terms of a criminal prosecution, because, you know, no matter what you do, the prosecutors have obviously turned their ears off to everything you're saying. And I don't know that it goes beyond the land of speculation. I don't.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
because saying what we have shows that he wasn't being truthful at the time he made his 911 call, or the reconstruction video he did with his Grant's mother. I don't think that necessarily gets you there when we talk about proof beyond a reasonable doubt, because that's a pretty high burden. And it would be pretty hard for a prosecutor to just say, well, we think this happened, so we're going to charge the case. That's not really the way it works. But civilly, when you go, hey, it's more likely than not that this happened and some of this other evidence can come in to support Gracie's allegations, then that's a different matter.
And you think because it's been so long that facts like, you know, he was struck at the top of the parking lot, the fact that like no blood was found there and blood wasn't dragged out, you don't think any of that would necessarily matter? Like if that was brought back up?
I think the best you could show is that it's inconsistent with what was said during the 911 call and or Aaron's statements. Okay. Inconsistent. But what happened? I mean, do you, Lauren, seriously, in that 57 minutes, do you have enough photographs or anything for somebody to go back and really tell you this is what I think happened?
Well, I have the photographs that everybody has that were released to the public. I tend to speculate sometimes that there's more that we don't have, especially when it came to crossing out these names and these letters saying we don't know all the facts. Well, I'm just going to assume that you're being truthful and that there are other facts that we don't know. So maybe there are more pictures. I just don't know why they wouldn't be shared to mitigate the pressure on these offices or just shut us up and give Grant's mother some peace of mind. And
well, civil suit might open some of those doors. A civil suit could open some of those doors. But right now, public speculation or public, you know, it hasn't been enough. It hasn't been enough to get them to change, right? And it's probably not going to be. I mean, we have to, there's a reality here that unless something tangible is brought, it's probably not going to get very far. I mean, like I say, look at the Michael Turney case, right? I mean, there was all kinds of speculation that he caused his daughter's death. But there was never any real proof. There was never any real evidence. Look, the fact that there was a death under suspicious circumstances and the fact that the story didn't make sense when it was explained on the 911 call should have been enough to, had there been a diligent investigation at the onset, we'd be talking about a different situation. But now I just think the ball has been dropped. There's just no way.
Right. And I was looking at this article when the Gallatin PD were so excited they got body cams. Like, look at us, we can keep everybody safe. And then you get called to a potentially fatal accident and no one's wearing them. It's weird. And I don't even go into like a lot of the emails I get from people. But when enough people say things about Sumner County, I tend to listen. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's kind of crazy that XYZ happens. Like there's a reason that he was in Sumner County that day. Yeah. And well, I really appreciate your expertise. Really, I do. I really appreciate the way that you came at this. I appreciate your honesty. And
well, thank you. And I want to close. Just remember what what Grant wanted to do before his death. And really, to me, you actualize his life and bring the justice if you follow what he wanted to do, as opposed to trying to beat your head against the wall.
Love
you
that.
Get, yeah. Think about him. We always say it's about the victim. What did he want to do? And what would he want to do now?
That's real. Yeah, that's really important. Thank you for reminding me of that, really. And where can people find you if they want to follow you?
People can find me across social media platforms at Nirmi Unchained. That's Twitter and Instagram. And then I have a true crime Facebook group, Nirmi's True Crime Clubhouse on Facebook, and I post my appearances and various different things that that I do.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Kirk.
You bet, Lauren.
So that was interesting. And I'm so glad that he reminded me of what Grant really wanted. He wanted to protect his sister. And I do lose sight of that sometimes. So it's a nice reminder. And I do always want to make sure that I am honoring Grant with this podcast. I really do like getting different takes on the case, even though sometimes it might get me a little down. And you know, I admitted I was very drained last week, and yes, I get frustrated. Hearing Kirk say that just makes me, it made me cringe, because I've talked to you guys about how much I've learned between last season and this season on this podcast, and I know I am just so cringy in the first, 20 episodes that I did, or maybe you guys think I'm still cringy, but I think I've gotten better. But the fact is, I'm human, and I am passionate about this case. But yeah, Kirk has given me a lot to think about. And I also, I'd like to get a second opinion on some of the stuff that he said. So I do plan on doing that. And I will remind everyone once again, the complaint's being worked on and we're going about it a different way. But we know what has to be done. So, you know, if you are in the Tennessee area, please.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Please keep putting your faith in us. I appreciate all of you listening and all of the support. Until next time.